Okay, it's good to see everybody. So yesterday we had begun to introduce the concept of lashes of Malkos, and we said that there are 207 possible cases that you can violate and be subject to Malkos. Now, one of the things that we hadn't discussed yet that we'll discuss tonight is that a person could do a singular action and actually be subject to multiple sets of lashes for just doing one action, because you can violate a multiple chiyuve malchus, as we say, at once. So that's something that we'll talk about. So you can imagine, you know, doing one action and be subject not to 39 lashes, but to 78, or even multiples of that, depending on, you know, what exactly it is that one did. So just to review very briefly what we said yesterday, is malchus is a very difficult category to pin down, because it doesn't fit into the two basic categories that we have in halacha in terms of financial restitution, what we call mamonos, or knasos if it's a penalty, and then on the other hand, dinei nefashos. And that's why we had this dispute when it came to malkos. Is it going to be adjudicated by a court of three, the typical beit din which is used for monetary cases, or a court of 23? And if it's adjudicated by a court of 23, then why? Is it because it's really like a capital case, because it's involving corporeal punishment? So we had to discuss that a little bit. And we said, you know, there are so many exceptions. There are so many Torah-level prohibitions, so many lavin for which you don't get malkos, that it begins to seem like it's really more the exception than it is the rule. So we talked about a lav hanitak lase. Let's say the Torah says, lo tikach ha'em al banim, that when you take the eggs, you're not supposed to have the mother bird there. It says, shaleach teshalach ha'em. So as long as you can correct what you did, lav hanitak lase, then there won't be malkot. Or for example, a lav she'en bo masa, that if the lav doesn't have a particular action associated with it, so for example, the first lav, when the Rambam enumerates the 365 prohibitions, lo yelecha Elohim acherim, so this doesn't have an action associated with it, right? There's no action associated with internally believing in another god. You don't even have to verbalize it. If you verbalize it, maybe that will already be one of the chiyuve misa, but it has to be a lav she'esh b'maisa, and that's from the Torah, because the Torah says that right next to the parsha of Malkos, lo tachsom shor b'disho, that as the ox is threshing, you're not allowed to muzzle it, because it's a form of harming the animal, perhaps, and so that's the second basic category. Then we talked about a lav shenitan lazharas misas bestin, something for which you could get a capital crime is not subject to Malkos. This is the principle that we call kimlei b'deraba minei, that when you come to a human court, if the human court can give you the death penalty, even in theory, even if they're not going to apply it in this case, there'll be no malko. So that's a third category. Lav hanitan l'tashlumin is a fourth category. If the lav is subject to being paid back restitution, we say kol ha'meshaleh mein oloka. Then we talked about a lav shebichlalos, where the Torah says, for example, lo tochlu al adam. Lo tochlu al adam has many different meanings. So you're not allowed to eat something before the blood has been removed, before the animal is completely dead after shechita. It also means that if the Beit Din sentences somebody to death, that they should fast the rest of the day. Lo tochlu al hadam, because they sentence somebody to death. It has many different meanings. It connects to Ben Sohar or Mora. And so that's called the lav shebichlalos. There's no malkos for that. That would be a fifth category. And then there's a lav habami chlala, say. If the Torah, for example, says that the Kohen Gadol was supposed to marry an almana, supposed to marry a bitula, excuse me, v'hu isha b'vtula yikach, it means if he doesn't marry a bitula, so that's a lav. So, for example, if he marries an almana, a widowed woman, so that's called the lav haba michlal say, that also doesn't get malkos. So we already said six categories where you don't get malkos. So we have one exception, that's an exception. You have two exceptions, those are two exceptions. You have three, four, five, six exceptions. So you already see that Malkos is a little bit more of a complicated case. So now that the Mishnah is going to describe what we call the Chidushei Malkos, where it's not obvious at all that there should be Malkos. And the reason is, as we'll see in the context of this Mishnah, that we already explained that, for example, when you could theoretically get Mitat Beit Din, when you could get Misas Bezdin, so there's no Malkos. So it's a big Chiddush to say that the violations of the Torah for which there's kares, for example, eating on Yom Kippur or eating chametz on Pesach, that you could be subject to Malkos if somebody warned you for Malkos, but the halacha is that you can. So remember, we pointed out yesterday that there are 21 examples of chiyuve kares where you could get Malkos, and 18 examples of misa b'dei shamayim, and 168 examples of just plain lav sheyesh bo maisa. So ve'elu hein aloket, these violations are subject to lashes. Haba alachoso, ve'alachos aviv, alachos imo, ve'al achos ishto, ve'al eshes achiv, ve'al eshes achi aviv, ve'al hanida. So these seven different women, to have relations with them would normally be a chiyuv kares. A person does it intentionally. If they do it by accident, you didn't realize it was your sister, you thought it was your wife, you're living in a cramped log cabin, and you make a big mistake, so then you'd be chayav a karban chatas in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. If you did it on purpose, you'd be chayav kares. But if somebody was there and says, you shouldn't do this, you'd be subject to lashes for doing so, then you could get lashes for these seven cases. Again, person's sister, their mother's sister, their father's sister, their father's brother's sister, etc., etc. So these seven cases are not obvious cases, but they are subject to lashes. We mentioned before, almana l'choen gadol, so that's a big chiddush to say that, because again, the Torah initially just says, v'hu isha b'psula yikach, and then the Torah comes back and says, almana ugrusha v'chalala zonas eila lo yikach. So that is a subject to lashes as well. Grusha v'chalutza l'choen hedyot is another example. Mamzera su nesina li Yisrael. So this is a very interesting category. I want to focus in on the category of a nesina. So there's a story in Sefer Yoshua, which is a really interesting story, about a group of people that they were afraid of the Jewish people who were entering the land. So the Rambam explains that when the Jewish people, under the leadership of Yoshua ben Nun, when they entered the land, they offered everybody a peace treaty. But these individuals, the first time around, they didn't pay attention. They missed the letter. Okay, so then they were afraid of having a battle with Yehoshua, so they pretended that they were from very far away. So how do you pretend you're from very far away, that you've been traveling a long distance? You put on some worn clothing, you get some moldy bread, you get some wine sacks that are not like we had at the wine event the other Motzei Shabbos, where you know, the finest wines, everything looks like it's very old. And they came and they said, we're from very far away, and we heard that you left Egypt, and we'd like to make a peace treaty with you. And Yoshua says, terrific, peace treaty. We love making peace treaties. Peace treaty, okay. And then they find out that they're really involved in a deception. And the truth of the matter is, they said, you know, we shouldn't really honor this, but it would be a desecration of God's name. Because after all, we took an oath in the name of God that we were going to have a peace treaty with you. So it says that Yehoshua gave them like a little bit of a penalty, where Yehoshua says, okay, we're not going to have any war, because after all, we made a peace treaty. But the Navi says, Vayitneim Yehoshua, Yehoshua placed them as chot ve'etzim v'shoa ve'mayim, to be woodchoppers and water drawers. So because the verse says, Vayitneim Yehoshua, that he placed them, we always call them the Netinim, the ones who were placed. And then, okay, so they were living there, and the question is, if one of them would convert, what would the status be? So that was basically okay, but the Gemara explains that David HaMelech made a decree that we shouldn't have anything to do with them in terms of marriage. And the reason for that was because they acted in a very cruel fashion. They acted in a very, very cruel fashion. But the story is that Shaul, the first king, who we're learning about in the Sefer Shmuel here right now, so Shaul had a massacre of the city of Nov, which is a city of Kohanim, and the city of Nov was sort of the one that supplied the food to the city of Gibeon, these individuals who had involved themselves in this deception of Yehoshua. And so after the death of Shaul, there was a terrible drought, and the question is, why is this going on? So David consults with Hashem, and Hashem explains to him, it's because of what Shaul did to the Givonim, and the Givonim have not settled their scores yet. So anyway, the Givonim decide that we're going to do is they're going to, in revenge for what Shaul did to the city of Nov, of Kohanim, that was their supplier that made sure that they had food, so they decide to kill members of the household of Shaul. But here's the really cruel part: not just they killed them in an act of vengeance, but they left their bodies exposed, which is one of the worst things that you could do. In Judaism, we have such a principle of kavod hames, that a person's body has to be treated with enormous respect and dignity and buried right away, and they left the bodies out. So David HaMelech said, people that behave this way, they behave with cruelty, we can't associate with them. Because he says the Jewish people are defined by three characteristics. They're compassionate, rachmanim, they're modest, so they have a sense of shame if they do something wrong, baishanim, and then they also do kindness, gomle chasadim. And this achzarius, this cruelty, is not compatible with being a part of the Jewish people. So that's why the Mishnah says that a Jewish man isn't allowed to marry a woman from that community, and not just the Mamzeres. So it's really interesting, you know, in all of the craziness of today, you know, people, not so much in these circles, but in other circles, if somebody's mother doesn't have the right color tablecloth, or she doesn't use the right detergent, so oyvei, then you have a problem in terms of, you know, the children getting together. But the one thing that, if you actually look in the codes of Jewish law, in the Shulchan Aruch and in the Rambam, it says, you know, here's somebody you should be really careful about marrying. It says if you find somebody who's cruel, who's angry all the time, because it goes against what the Gemara says, that the Jewish people are characterized by three virtues. That is to say, they're very kind, they're compassionate, and they have a sense of shame and modesty. So, you know, if somebody asks you, you know, they're using the wrong detergent, or they're using the wrong tablecloth, or what have you, or the wrong hair covering, or not a hair covering, all these other things, which are, you know, not part of what you actually find in the Shulchan Aruch or the Rambam. If somebody says to you, you know, they're not nice, then you should say, yeah, you have to be careful about that. The Shulchan Aruch says, then you really have to double check to make sure they're actually Jewish, because, you know, that's a serious problem. Likewise, if it's a Jewish woman, you'd have the same issue if it was a man from one of those communities. We mentioned before that it's possible that a union, if it's illicit for multiple reasons, that it would actually cause two different sets of malchus. So, amano grusha chayavin la mishum shnei shemos, or grusha v'chalutza, eno chayav ala mishum shem echad bilvad. So we'll conclude on that note. So a grusha v'chalutza, chalutza is a question as to whether it's just a rabbinic law or it's divrei sofrim, is something like of an extension of a Torah law. So there you'd be only subject to one set of lashes. So again, these are all sort of novel cases of the 207 cases where there is a chi of malchus, or to say that there is multiple chiyuve malchus that could take place at the same time. So we'll pick it up tomorrow with some of the issues involving ritual purity and impurity. They're a little bit less practical for today, but draw on some novel concepts in terms of lashes as well. Rabbi Hanani ben Akasha Maritz Kadosh Baruch Hu Zakos Yisrael, V'fikach Yirbal Lahem Tor Mitzvah Shenemar, Adonai Chafetz Zaman Tzidko, Yagdil Torah V'Yadir, Kadosh Derabanan.